Welcome to Catch the Flava on Radio Regent. I'm your host, Nicholas.
And I'm your co-host, Jaden.
And for the first segment of the show, we're going to be talking about film in Regent Park. Every September, people from around the world come to Toronto for the International Film Festival. But in Regent Park, we have our own celebration of film. Here to talk to us about that is Elizabeth Mandeño, who is with the Regent Park Film Festival. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So this summer, Regent Park Film Festival is going to be showing some films in the park. Can you tell us about that? Like, what is Under the Stars?
Yeah, so Under the Stars is Movies in the Park, right across the street from Daniel Spectrum in the big park. It's a six-week outdoor screening series. Every week we bring a family-friendly feature-length film, also paired with pre-show activities and some fun programming. So that's what we do all summer. And then in the fall, we have our actual film festival, a four-day free film festival. That's November 15th through November 18th, and that's our Regent Park Film Festival.
And who is welcome to come to Under the Stars?
Basically, it's open to everyone. It's open to the public. It's outdoors. It's all PG, family-friendly, so we want anyone to come, and every week there's a sort of different theme and feel, so everyone should come out.
Very nice. What made you want to be a part of this event?
Yeah, I'm a coordinator with Regent Park Film Festival, and basically I was just drawn to the mandate of accessibility. All the programming they do year-round is free, including workshops. I like that they prioritize, you know, minorities or racialized people, which is fantastic. And yeah, it's just a lot of really thoughtful programming drew me to the team.
Very nice.
So you mentioned accessibility. So is Under the Stars free for people, or is there a cost?
Yeah, Under the Stars is free. It's outdoor. You just show up and bring your blanket, bring your chair, and just watch a movie.
Great.
Very nice. Why do you think a Regent Park Film Festival happens?
Why? I think that's an interesting question. I think the main objective of Regent Park Film Festival is to bring really stories for people from all walks of life, and to show those films here for free to all the different kinds of people that live in this community, whether they're elders or families or otherwise.
So talking more about the Regent Park Film Festival, could you tell us when it runs, mm-hmm. when it's held, and what types of films are selected?
Yeah, so our festival in the fall is in November. It's November 15th to 18th. It's really a mix. We try to have some family programs in that as well. We have a late night screening, so that would be more an older audience. We have short films, both local short films, Toronto short films, and also international short films and international feature-length films and local feature-length films. So it's a really mixed program, but it's meant to draw a whole bunch of different people, whether they come from Regent Park or the broader Toronto community.
How do you choose your films?
Basically, so for Under the Stars, it's sort of an in-house conversation about, you know, what family-friendly films will draw a big audience, will people enjoy. And for the actual festival, we have programming committees we also have an open call-out. So basically, our call opens in, I believe, March, and that's when anyone can submit to the festival, and then our programming committee will sift through all the short films, all the feature-length films, and decide how to make the strongest, most well-rounded program.
So like family time movies or stuff, right?
Just to not confuse the two.
Because you have Moana to like a Bollywood film. So.
Yeah. So for Under the Stars, not to confuse the two, but with Under the Stars, we have more of a family focus. It's PG, it's outdoors, it's in the park, and there are a lot of like families and communities coming out. Whereas the festival is sort of a mix, and it tends to bring more of an older audience. So with that, we try to have family programming, but we also have definitely like stuff for adults and film buffs and et cetera there as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Regent Park Film Festival has been running for like 12 years now. Why do you think it's, or is it longer?
It's actually this year, November, is going to be our 15th anniversary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So why do you think it's so important for this community to have its own festival?
I think it's important because It's a thing that helps kind of create more visibility in Toronto around Regent Park. We are a community of stories and artists, so that's really important. I think it's such a like diverse community that it's great to have a film festival that caters to that and that appreciates and values that.
Do you think other places in Toronto should have this type of festival?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different film festivals. Some of them we partner with, like Caribbean Tales Film Festival is partnering this week for a screening of Moana, as well as Scarborough Worldwide Film Festival. So there are some other film festivals in different sort of pockets of the city that do celebrate, you know, the diversity and different stories.
Yeah.
And so how long have you been working with Regent Park Film Festival?
Yeah, I came into the team last year.
Oh, okay.
And so, then prior to that had just been, I just came in an audience goer. I just came and watched films. Yeah.
So what led you to pursue working with Regent Park Film Festival?
Yeah, I really love their mandate. I also just, when I went to the film festival, I just was drawn to it and really liked what they were programming. Myself, I come from a background in film. I went to school for film at Ryerson, and then started getting into more event programming and was like, I kind of want to stick with this film festival thing. Let me find one that, you know, is a good fit for me. And I think this is it. Yeah.
How'd you find out about film festival?
About film festivals?
Yes.
Basically, so anyone who's in film school, basically you want your short films to go to get into film festivals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you're just kind of keeping track of all the film festivals that are happening. Of course, TIFF is the big one that everyone knows about.
Right.
But then you start to look at all the other sort of arts programming in the city, and you realize, you know, there's different programming and different things happening for different kinds of people, which is fantastic. So that's basically how I found it. And then I also, in my last year at Ryerson in film, I organized my thesis showcase film festival. So then from there, I was like, I want to keep organizing and working in film festivals. Yeah.
Cool. So for the young filmmaker out there who wants to get their short film seen, how would they go about submitting to Regent Park Film Festival?
Yeah. I think the best way is literally just to submit through our website.
Right.
Come March, you know, just keep tabs on the deadlines and just submit, and then hopefully your product will speak for itself.
To have this film festival, is there any challenges that come across the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess there's many different logistical things that go into films, whether it's getting a copy of the film that, like, is, you know, high enough definition for screening.
Yeah, copyright.
Exactly, copyright, screening fees, because with a lot of feature-length films, you have to pay screening fees to have it at the festival. There's, like, things where we sell popcorn, we sell drinks, so just, like, the little things of, like, making sure we have all the pieces in order.
Yes.
And then, of course, a lot of that does rely on the support of our fantastic volunteers who really help, put out any flames. But, yeah, some issues arise once in a while.
So, back to Under the Star, we talked about, like, the film selection that you have. You have Moana is going to be playing, which is a very family-friendly film that I want to actually go see.
Yes,
but then
it's okay to say you're welcome.
Yes.
On other days, you have a Bollywood film. So with that wide selection of films, is there a specific goal that you're trying to achieve? Like, what is the goal of Under the Stars, really?
Yeah, I think it's like a community activation. It's just like one of many things that helps keep the park presence active and alive, and helps bring people together. And it's just a sort of simple way of enjoying each other's company. And in that, I think we try to show a whole sort of range in our programming, and try to make sure that there are, you know, that there are Black voices, that there are Indigenous voices, that there are South Asian voices, as it is reflective of the community.
So are you, like, trying to show different cultures of films, or?
Yeah, I think we do. Yeah. Yeah, that's part of our objective, for sure.
So as someone in or getting into the film industry or the underground film industry, can we talk about maybe like representation, such as like representation in Hollywood compared to representation in film festivals? Like, why do you think that there's such a gap in representation between Hollywood and film festivals?
That's really interesting. That's a great question. I think when it comes to Hollywood, there's a lot of pressure on really dollars and what will sell and what has sold, and following sort of old trends of box office sales.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in film festivals, there really is artistic merit is put up above all else. You know, we want to tell interesting stories, we want to show interesting stories, and that's why film festivals exist, to be platforms for good stories and good films. So I just think it's a matter of different mandates and missions. Yeah.
Right. So are you basically trying to like more show how better or how the film is, and maybe like take lessons from it instead of just showing the film for entertainment? Or
I think I guess it can be both, right? A film can be entertaining and then also be still be valuable, whether it's culturally or educationally. So I think we are trying to do a bit of both at Regent Park. I think especially with Under the Stars, we want to show films that have kind of a wide appeal. But then we also want to have films like Bicycle Thieves where, you know, a film buff will appreciate it and it's part of the Criterion Collection and maybe otherwise wouldn't have been shown in Regent Park. So we want to have a sort of mix of something we know people enjoy, like Moana, and something mm-hmm. that we hope people will enjoy. Yeah.
So for the Regent Park Film Festival, I want to talk about maybe its accessibility, because for me, as a Torontonian, whenever I hear about TIFF, I always want to go, but it just seems like such a almost far-fetched thing for me to actually like go and attend. But with Regent Park Film Festival, because it's like in such a small community, it seems like it's very accessible for all of Toronto to go to. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's a four-day free festival. And what's great is that you can just like, you can look at our entire lineup for that festival and then just like register online through Eventbrite, or you can register in person, you know, by coming into our office or giving us a phone call if you don't have access to internet. And that's sort of how you secure your seat. While we do have good attendance, it's not like you're going to be shut out from any screenings if they do sell out. Like, odds are if you come early enough, you will get in. So there's definitely that perk of like, you know, just like this film festival is here for you. If you want to attend it, it's really easy to do. So
is there really any limit for how many people can come? Like, you don't want like half the city to come or anything.
That's true. I guess we also haven't reached a point where we have to worry about being like stopping anyone from coming. I think right now we're in a phase where we just want to keep encouraging people to come and enjoy the films.
Right.
So with your selection of films, could you talk about maybe what type of films you had showing last year at your last year's festival?
At the festival,
How often does the festival occur?
Oh, it's every single year.
Okay, so
So at like last year's film festival, I'm just gonna have to think for a second. We had a huge selection. I remember one of the films was a film called Astray, about a young Somali man who basically is sent out of the place he lives and is not able to live at home anymore, and also stumbles across this sort of stray dog that has this sort of parallel narrative with him, where he's just like trying to find where he belongs and who he connects to.
Yeah.
And another great thing I should add actually about the film festival in the fall is that most of our screenings for our feature-length programs are paired with some sort of panel or discussion.
Okay.
So there is that extra Q&A and that extra sort of thoughtfulness about and reflection about the films that we show. So for that, we had a Skype with the director as well as some Somali Toronto artists to sort of contextualize and talk about the film.
Hmm.
Yeah. And we also we show documentaries. We showed some Regent Park focused films as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a whole wonderful range there.
How come you read the film festivals for free and you don't have any sort of charges for it?
Basically, we are able to have this free film festival and our free programming through a number of different things. One of them is we rely a lot on different grants to help sort of fund our different programs. We have Lights, Camera, Action membership program, so we invite people to donate regularly to sort of sustain the free programming. And then we also have sponsorships, so like major sponsors who will, you know, contribute hopefully on a yearly basis to those specific programs. So we just, you know, rely on different forms of funding to keep it free and accessible.
And for the films in the festival, do you have a sort of like award ceremony for them, or is there like best pick of the films?
We do not have an awards. Yeah, ceremony.
So everyone just gets to show off their contact on like a same level basis.
Then. Exactly. Yeah.
What do you hope for the film festival to go, or how far do you think it will go, and what do you hope to achieve out of it?
Yeah, I think the main thing is just like getting a whole range of people, especially people from the community, to come out to the festival and hope that it, you know, serves them. In terms of like, we operate in Daniel's Spectrum, which is wonderful. So just maybe to just, like, fill up every screening and have engaging, wonderful conversations. And maybe, who knows, like, maybe that the success of the festival can create more of a demand for, like, year-round regular screenings or other things to happen throughout the year, like Under the Stars. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's what I would hope would happen. Yeah.
A big get-together, basically.
Yeah, and to continue that, to have, like, more films, you know, after it's done in November, to have some more different screening series in the new year, in January, or just more workshops and more more activities, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So throughout this summer, is Under the Stars, like, the only event that Regent Park Film Festival will be doing? Are there any other things you're doing in the summer?
Yeah, so Under the Stars is primarily going to be our focus starting tomorrow all the way through August 23rd.
Yeah.
That's like the big time event, or?
Yeah, exactly. That's the big time event. We will have some other sort of workshops. We definitely have other workshops happening. A partnership with Kim's Convenience called Live It to Learn It. So we're going to be sending some people there to be production assistants. So that will be a few weeks throughout the summer. We are going to be launching some other things that I'm going to have to keep under wraps until we officially launch them. But we do have something else coming up in August. Yeah, so we do have a whole bunch of different kind of other workshops that we'll be running. But for the summer, in terms of screenings, it's definitely Under the Stars.
All right.
Okay, so I think we're going to take a short musical break, and then we'll be back with Elizabeth.
Okay, fantastic. Right.
We're back with Catch the Flava on Radio Regent. I'm your host, Nicholas.
And I'm your co-host, Jaden.
And we're here with Elizabeth from Regent Park Film Festival. So, Elizabeth, can you tell us more in depth about Under the Stars? I know it says that there's a pre-show that happens at 7. What's that?
Yeah, so basically starting at 7 each week, we'll have different activities. So this week we're going to have some coloring book exercises, and Children's Book Bank is going to actually have a story time. So they're going to be bringing a book and reading it to the children, and then just kind of engaging them in the storytelling, as well as having a whole bunch of free books for giveaway. So every week it's kind of reflective of some of the themes in the book, some of the themes in the film. Mm-hmm. So next week for Hunt for the Wilder People, we're going to have a scavenger hunt with the Boys and Girls Club. But we're also going to have some rugby because it's more of an adventurous film. So that's going to be super fun. For Jana 2, Jana Na, we're going to be having a henna artist, which is awesome. And then also some Bollywood dance lessons as well. Bicycle Thieves, we'll have Charlie Free Wills will be having a bicycle blender, which is basically like you ride this stationary bike and it acts as a blender and it blends up like smoothies. So they'll be there. They'll actually be there every week, but they'll definitely be there that week.
Oh, yeah. I'm in now.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. And then we also have, for Hidden Figures, we're going to have like the Chess Institute, which is going to be bringing like life-size chess. Yeah. So that'll be cool.
Oh, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. So keep tabs on like all of our Facebook pages for some updates on that programming. So we are going to be getting additional programming as well. So just, keep an eye out.
And what's the rain date for?
Yes, so the rain date. Actually, so Under the Stars was supposed to start last week.
Okay.
But there was a thunderstorm. So we had to cancel our screening of Space Jam. So ideally, if it doesn't rain at all for the rest of the summer, Space Jam will be the film that we show on the rain date. If it happens with multiple other films, which it won't, but if it does, then we have to just, make a decision about which film we want to have for the rain date. And that's the film that will be playing August 23rd in the park. So right now it's Space Jam.
All right.
Yeah.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Under the Stars, tomorrow is Moana.
Mm-hmm.
Next week is Hunt for the Wilderness. What's that film about? Is that more geared to older people, or can everyone come out to that?
I think it's going to be a mix of both. It's definitely comedy. Last year we showed this film called Boy from the same director.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's like this New Zealand filmmaker
right.
Whose name I'm blanking on right now. Oh, no. Taika Waititi?
Yeah.
Anyways, but he definitely has like a sort of a mix of dark humor. And also like sort of familial drama. So it definitely has a lot of quirky characters. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be showing the trailer for it this week to kind of give people a taste of what it's like.
Like a little foreshadow for the next film?
Exactly. So it should be really fun. Yeah.
What are the programs for the whole film festival?
For the film festival in the fall?
Yes.
So the programs for that, I'm trying to think. It really is a mix. There's like documentary, feature-length films, the late-night screening, family screenings, virtual reality. I don't know why I didn't mention that. Last year we introduced a virtual reality space.
I was actually going to talk to you about like, because I think like now it's 2017, there's a lot of new media coming into play when it comes to like, when we think of film, we don't just think of like watching a film on the screen. Like there's 3D, there's like 4D now where the seats move.
So
are the new things that are coming to film festivals now? So like virtual reality?
Yeah, I think in the last like 2 years, virtual reality has really taken off. So I guess for people that don't know, that's like when you experience a film or a short video project in 360 and you get to kind of, through your headset and through your movements, can control what you see and what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really cool, immersive way of telling stories.
So how was that incorporated in the festival last year?
Yeah, so for us, we had a separate virtual reality space with, you know, headsets, iPads for viewing, volunteers that were trained on how to use all this equipment and show people how to use it. It was really cool, and it proved to be a huge success, so we're definitely going to bring it back. And some of them were just, like, you know, showing people how other parts of the world live, but you got to, like, live as with a little girl in school in like, Africa. So, like, just, like, different kind of, with film, it can be, there's the option of sort of making it an immersive film versus, you know, it's more than just, like, it's not just, like, for video gaming technology. It can also be, you know, have that storytelling aspect as well.
Is the film festival going to go through any upgrades or so? Like, do you think it should be, like, new to the new introduced technology, like 4D and 3D or so? Like,
I guess it depends. Or would necessarily. I mean, you know, their funds are limited. We don't necessarily need to jump on every trend, but I think there is, we definitely want to embrace whatever comes up. So I think it was a good idea to embrace virtual reality. We'll see. 4D sounds kind of pricey, kind of out there. But I don't know. Who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
For the film festival, you mentioned that there are panels sometimes. Are there ever, like, special guests, maybe Canadian celebrities that make an appearance, or I guess celebrities from the, or actors from the films that come?
Yeah, we try to get, if they're local, if the film's made in Toronto, we try to get the actual filmmaker to come.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we had a panel with Kim's Convenience.
Right.
So, that had, you know, all the key cast and the directors, and that was actually held at Paintbox as a sort of separate event. But where we can, we try to draw out as much talent from the film as possible. Yeah.
Great. Let's see.
That's actually all the time we have with Elizabeth for now, but thank you for talking to us. Everyone, go to Under the Stars. It starts tomorrow with Moana. And we're going to take a short musical break, and then we'll be with our next guest.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Welcome back to Catch the Flava on Radio Regent. I'm your host, Nicholas.
And I'm your co-host, Jaden.
And now we have someone who's going to talk to us about mental health, addiction, and her personal journey. Erdene Hope is a mental health caseworker in the community and has been working in Regent Park for 20 years. Welcome, Erdene.
Hey, what's up, guys? thanks for having me on your show, Catch the Flavor. I'm just loving the vibe. I'm just loving that young people are also giving back to the community and sharing their thoughts and their music. I mean, Ghetto Boys, my mind's playing tricks on me, you know?
Yeah.
Hey. My mind does that sometimes.
And so for those who don't know, Erdene has her own show on Radio Regent. Called, what is it called?
Ear Candy. Every Friday from 3 to 5. And I've been at Radio Regent now since the radio inception about 6 years ago. I was on the board for CKLN and also a former radio host programmer. And I had a show called Moodle Beauty Affair.
Cool. So before we get into that, we kind of want to talk to you about your mental health caseworking journey and your position. So could you tell us about your work as a mental health caseworker?
Yes. I'm what they call a consumer survivor, which means that I've experienced either mental health or addiction or both.
Like first witnessed?
And first witnessed. And that's part of my journey. And so I work in the community and with different agencies in this community. Usually the people that are marginalized, homeless. I work with the courts, hospitals, mm-hmm. corrections, jails, probation. And as a caseworker, we get a client and he may be homeless. So we or get them shelter, to stay in a shelter. They might not have financial support like GetOW, which is Ontario Works, or Ontario Disability Support Program. Or they may be new to the country, and we would have to look out for immigration. And it's a whole host of things, depending on the individual. It's individual basis. I basically work mostly with men from the ages around 32 to about 70. And women are harder to transition into case management programs because they're more self-reliant and kind of network a little bit more. And men do so as well, but not as much, and rely on one-on-one support.
Yes. What do you hope to achieve with your work?
Well, I'm almost 60. I'll be 60 next year. So I grew up here in the Riverdale Regent Park community, and I think I've already started a legacy because mm-hmm. I'm pretty known.
Yeah.
I walk down the street and it's hi D.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of love, but also that I didn't grow up in a place and was just like a tree falling from a branch. I actually planted roots and was able to do something productive.
Right.
I also do literacy workshops. I'm a trained writing facilitator. So I do writing workshops with mostly women right now that have like addictions or maybe street involved and have literacy issues. And it's been profound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a bit about how you became a caseworker, how you got into that type of work?
Well, I was clean for a little bit of time, and I needed to give back to my community, and I didn't have a job, so I volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
I always worked in the retail field, like music and clothes. That was my thing, you know?
Right.
And I took my skills to the hardest corner, which is Sherbourne and Dundas, and I started just organizing some programs. I like to cook.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I started cooking food, and then I started cooking mega amounts of food.
Good hobbies.
5,000 pounds a week.
Wow.
And we fed 200 to 300 people at least two or three times a day. So that's massive amounts of food.
Real.
And then
would you do that like in the back of your house or where?
No, I worked at the church on the corner of Dundas.
I volunteered at a church before where they have like that sort of thing.
Well, the church, I actually am very spiritual, so I engage with the Christian community, Catholic community, even the Muslim community, and they were able to help out providing meals to give people a chance to give back as well,
because
I learned that. But also to show people that have less than we do that people do care and they want to give back.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you guys are getting down and showing youth, like, it's powerful to recognize your music skills, your thought process, and how you interview people. You know, someone might hear and they dream to do this all the time, but never had a chance to do that. And that might be someone that you might look to interview.
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to do the type of work you do? Like, what made you want to start these programs? What made you want to help the mental health?
Because I have clinical depression, so it was hard to know that you have something that's different from somebody else, and the stigma that goes along with it, especially being a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And accessing services and being a single mom. You know, I was always afraid that if I really lose it, that I could lose my kids or not be able to function and hold down a job. And along the way, I accessed different resources, and I found it really unique. And then just the stigma and that sometimes the degradation people with mental illness or addiction are treated. And I see humans as humans, you know. I remember one time I hugged this guy. He was, he used to write for the Globe and Mail. He's staying at a shelter and, you know, he's 60-something and tragedy took over his life. He started drinking and then lost everything. Mm-hmm. His family died in a horrific car crash, and he witnessed it. And that changed his life. And just hearing the stories that he wrote about, like things that I didn't know up close and personal. But then he didn't access any service because he was so afraid of being stigmatized with being an alcoholic, having post-traumatic stress disorder, and, you know, staying in a shelter. He was covered with bed bugs, and he was just bawling because it was one of his kid's birthday. Yeah. And I'm freaking out because I'm looking at him, seeing the bed bugs. But I hugged him, and I said, Lord, please don't let me take them home. But, you know, something like that makes a difference in a person's life, or a smile, or a good morning. And we don't know the impact that it would have on lives. And that really opened up a lot of things for me, and I started to really try. And when I did that, more and more people came. It was just like, sometimes I felt like Jesus. These people are, come on to me, and I will help you. You know, and I'd find a way. And I was fortunate in finding the resources to do that. Mm. And the community was really helpful. Doing case management now is one-to-one, and we rely on different agencies or have to support the client to deal with agencies in order to either get rid of their charges or get to stay in Canada, find a place to live, be stable on medication, because sometimes when they leave the hospital, they're really heavily medicated. It's almost like a straitjacket because they can't move, they can't talk, they can't do this. So, yeah, it's very interesting work.
Mm. So could you tell us about maybe one of your most proudest moments from, because you have a very extensive resume. I think it's almost like 5 pages long. So is there something maybe you're most proud of from your work that you've done so far?
Well, when I first started working, my daughter was only 6 months old.
Yeah.
Ooh. And so I used to bring her along. And she's going to be 21 on Friday. And she started coming and working alongside of me in the summertime from she was 3 years old. She finished her first degree in youth and child education.
Wow.
And she's doing mental health and justice. And she's in her second, she's going for a second year. Yep. So I think that's something that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
I think the most impact or most proudest moments that I've had, like I've had so many, too many to count, but I think in 2011, I had 6 girls start with a college preparation class. 2 of them were alcoholics, lost their kids. The other 4 were, they were all street involved. They were prostitutes. And they finished with honors in George Brown College for social work. One actually got a scholarship to go on to Ryerson University for her master's, or bachelor's.
Yeah,
nice.
Very nice.
So that's a proud moment when you see things happen there. Or the first time you see someone who's lived on the street for 10, 15, 20 years get their first apartment.
Yeah.
And he's like 56 years old.
Great. So we're going to take a short musical break, and then we'll be back with Erdene Hope. Thanks. Okay, we're back with Catch the Flava on Radio Regent. I'm your host, Nicholas.
And I'm your co-host, Jaden.
And we're here with Erdene Hope, a community member, a caseworker in Regent Park who's been working here for 20 years. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
So the next session we have for you is about your journey as a recovering addict and mental illness So it says that you've been clean now for 22 years. Congratulations on that.
Very well.
Do you mind telling us about the moment or experience that it prompted you to getting clean?
Sometimes when we're in relationships, it's like a codependent thing where your partner's doing it and you just kind of do it too. And then I found that I was doing it a lot more and triggered a lot more. And I had a son and he was quite small and I was doing it off and on. And I just didn't want the fact that I wouldn't not be his mother or someone would take him from me. Mm-hmm. And it was one or the other, and I chose my son. And then I just kept praying, and I said, God, you got to use me. You got to use my story to change lives. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, the self-confidence goes down, your esteem goes down, and that's where something else can take the place of it, like depression. And having both, you stay at a standstill in your life for a period of time. But then, you know, and I looked in his little face and he's saying, Mom, it gave me the courage to want to change that and just cut off certain things. And it's usually cutting off people, places, and things, right? So.
Are you to, what is your general audience? Do you speak for everyone or are you trying to speak for the children so you can make sure they don't go down the same road and have make sure their future is straight and straightforward and very well?
That's a hard question only because it's very broad.
Right.
I think for me, as you can see, as you said, my resume is quite extensive. I've done a lot of volunteering, Black Daddy's Club, Black Woman Secretariat, just different programs, not only to educate myself, but to be part of the community and exchange knowledge. Knowledge is key, and it's also power. And when I see youth and I can exchange, also listen to them first, because like we are all unique individuals, right? For youth, it's a different platform. Youth are easily, I don't know what the word would be, but they have their own ideals, and sometimes they don't meet mine. But if they listen to me or they offer their story to me, and I can anyway help, definitely, you know.
So we know that a lot of people struggle when they're in recovery. What keeps you going, and what advice would you have for people who are in the process of getting clean?
What keeps me going is learning to love myself. Mm-hmm. That was the journey. I don't think it's about using drugs or having depression. I think it's learning to love myself, self-acceptance of oneself. It's a long road, and I don't know, recovery for each individual, starts with, experiencing something traumatic that, that grips their life, grips them or grips their mind, grips their heart, grips their emotion, grips their finances, grips something that really changes their life. And, some people hold on to it for all their life. Some people will take steps to make changes. It depends on the individual, how they want to recover, so to speak.
At the end of your work, what do you hope to achieve out of it?
That I did the best that I could.
Yes.
You know, that I saved a life or helped a life or and be resourceful so when I get up to them ages I know where to go. I'll be resourceful as well, you know. I don't know. As long as I can listen to music still and then put my little boogie forward, I'm good.
That's good.
So you also mentioned how you're a creative writer facilitator. Mm-hmm. So you're a writer also. Could you tell us about that?
Well, yes, I've been a founding member for the Toronto Writers Collective.
Right.
And for the first time, I used that as part of my recovery as well, and sharing that with others. And this Saturday, I have two poems that will be coming out, mm-hmm. published mm-hmm. in an anthology, a book. Right. And so I'm really proud of that. And I like doing workshops with marginalized individuals, people that, because everyone has a voice. And some people can't spell or write, but mm-hmm. Sometimes one word can turn into a whole person's story or a whole person's truth. Sometimes you write it for them and read it back to them. And when they hear and they're brilliant. They're actually brilliant writers. And for me, that takes a lot of courage, but also it's nice to see that we can give back to the community and they can give back on their own terms with their own name as an author.
What programs do you have for your casework?
Well, I work for an agency called Soundtime Support Services, and we're open from 9 to 9 p.m. We have computers. We have a program called Smart Recovery, and it's a cognitive-based therapy program other than like a 12-step addiction program. We have movies. We have member-run groups, member-led initiatives where they might go and play baseball, or some play guitar, teach guitar, some use audio engineering and try to make some little beats, and they do all kinds of, so, but we have the facility that they can do that, and I'm really proud of that fact, and most of the people that work there are consumer survivors, have experienced mental illness or addiction. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that you are getting published this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Would you be able to tell us about the poems that are going to be featured in Voices from the Street?
I mean, if you don't want to spoil it.
It's called Voices from the Street.
Right, Voices from the Street.
Yeah, so I'm amongst, I believe, from Scarborough to Parkdale. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how many writers, I think 21. And I did two poems. One was Symbolic Resurrection, and it talks about my journey mm-hmm. with mental health and addictions. And the other one is Who Am I? And Who Am I? Music. I think music personifies who I am.
Cool. So you talked about how a poem is about your journey. So how has writing impacted your life?
I've written since I was a little child, you know. Yeah. I write stories. I hope to write a book one day. I think that's the legacy I want to leave behind mm-hmm. about the work that I've done and my trials and tribulations, as Bob Marley would say.
Oh, yeah.
But I find it a tool because, you know, sometimes you can't say the word that you want to say. So if I write it down and close my book, then I've already said it and between me and the word, right? So that's what writing means to me.
Mm-hmm. How far do you want your voice to be heard? Like, do you want your voice only to be heard in, like, in Regent Park, just Toronto, or do you want to be
I'm
globally?
No, I'm syndicated in Jacksonville, Florida, y'all.
Wow, okay.
Ear candy.
Okay. Nice.
Nice. So, a couple people in Philadelphia play my show.
Okay.
And
Philly?
UK.
Cool.
So
cool.
My voice is traveling.
All right, very. And how do you feel about that?
Humbled.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not a star yet. You can't get my autograph, but you know, you might see me walking down the street and says, "That's ear candy." That's what people call me, D or ear candy. So I go with both.
Cool. So thank you for talking with us. That was Erdene Hope, a mental health caseworker in Regent Park Community. That's it for Catch the Flavor this week. I'm your host, Nicholas.
And I'm your co-host, Jaden.
Thanks for listening.